Greetings, friends. The Kalama Sutta was presented to a group of townsfolk who had become confused by the various teachers who had come and gone, all claiming to teach the one true Dhamma. They asked the Buddha how could they know who they should follow. The Buddha responded, "Do not go by others' accounts or by legends or traditions. Do not follow scriptures or logical conjecture. Do not form conclusions through inference, analogies, or common agreement." The Kalama Sutta concludes with the Buddha describing the results of awakening directly through the Eightfold Path. For one who follows the Eightfold Path, following the Noble Ones, if there is an appearance after death, there will be a pleasant abiding. If there is no appearance after death, then in this present life there will be no ill will, no confusion, no hostility. Remaining pure, hatred will not touch you and suffering ends. I hope you find this talk helpful in developing your own understanding. Please feel free to contact me at any time. Peace. So this week's article is on the Kalama Sutta. The Kalama refers to a group of folks, a town, in northern India at the time of the Buddha. A rather good-sized town for that period of time, and in northern India, meaning it was probably around 2,000 or 3,000 people, which was a pretty big town center. And the interesting thing to me about that, and it's not really mentioned in the Sutta at all, is that it seems like the whole town was interested in spiritual matters. You know, it wasn't just a handful of people that from the town that came to the Buddha. It's portrayed at least as the entire town. I can't think of any place in the world today that would be a common thing, that an entire town would come out to hear any spiritual teacher, whether it was the Buddha or Jesus or anybody current. When the Dalai Lama or someone like that, Thich Nhat Hanh, gives a teaching, there's usually 3,000 or 4,000 people there. But it's not a whole town, you know. This was interesting in that way. And I didn't get into the whole background of the Kalama Sutta. So the Kalamas came to the Buddha with some concerns. At that time in northern India, there were quite a few spiritual teachers or religious teachers that would go around and they'd give their teaching and they'd all say the same thing. This is the one true teaching. Don't listen to anybody else. Follow me. And it was usually the local king or governor who decided who was the most advanced spiritual teacher, and then that's usually who everybody followed until the Buddha came along. So they heard that there's an awakened one in our midst. Let's ask him to come and talk to us. Hello, Gail. Looks like you've got the hot seat. That's what you get for coming late. Now, if you're more comfortable putting it someplace else, please feel.
I'm going to come in before her, so she has to get front.
Really, you don't have to sit there. I'm talking about the Kalamas. Did you read the article?
I didn't.
Okay.
I usually try to.
I'll just go back. That's okay. The Kalama was a place in northern India at the time of the Buddha. It was a town, I gather, around 2,000 or 3,000 people. This is not part of the sutta, but what I thought was interesting was that the whole town came to hear what the Buddha had to say. And that's such an uncommon, it was common back then, but it's so uncommon today. Imagine even the Buddha coming to Frenchtown, that everybody in Frenchtown go listen to it. It's not likely to happen. A handful of people probably would. And they had, one of the concerns they had is that all of the spiritual teachers that came to talk to them all said different things, but they all claimed that they were the one true understanding. You should follow me and forget about everybody else. And so they asked the Buddha, how do we figure this out? Who do we follow? How do we know who to follow? And so the Buddha goes into this, gives this teaching. And one of the things that he talked about is you shouldn't follow others blindly just because a lot of other people do. You shouldn't follow people just because they appeal to your ego or that they're charismatic. And basically he said
what you should use to decide who you should follow and what you should develop is your own experience. Follow your own experience. Does it fulfill the need that you're engaging in this teaching? So let me read a little bit of it. The article starts with just a quote from the Dhammapada: abstain from wrongdoing, work for the good of all, purify your mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. So I think a lot of you have heard that. That's just a very concise explanation of the Buddha's Dhamma. And what he's talking about, abstaining from wrongdoing is part of the Eightfold Path, work for the good of others is part of the Eightfold Path, and certainly purifying our mind is part of the Eightfold Path. And if we can do all three of those things, we've developed awakening along the Eightfold Path. Hello, David. How are you? If you want to sit on the floor, there's some more. You could grab a cushion. And you're good? In the Kalama Sutta, the Buddha addresses greed, hatred, and deluded thinking directly as a way of pointing out how other teachings fail to directly address the defilements. Defilements are these things as they occur in our minds. So there was a lot of esoteric and mystical teaching, some of it based on the early Vedas, but none of them directly addressed the problems of human suffering in this direct way, the cause of human suffering and how to eliminate it directly. The Buddha then uses the qualities of generosity, non-clinging, and well-concentrated mindfulness developed through the Eightfold Path as the framework for Dhamma practice. The Buddha points out that through awakening developed within the framework of the Eightfold Path, one becomes, and this is the quote of the Buddha, mindful and imbued with equanimity, free of ill will, undefiled and pure. And so these many of the other teachings had moral and ethical components to them, but they didn't address the root of the problem, the reason why we act in competitive and aggressive, and to use the word, in evil ways. They basically said, don't do it. But if that was enough for just to hear that teaching, don't act that way, and we could actually do it, if there wasn't an underlying force called clinging making us act in less than skillful ways, we could all just hear that once and do it, couldn't we? And we would awaken, if that was all there was to it. The Buddha consistently presented the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path as unique and distinct, not as a common teaching that could be integrated into other teachings, according to the hardened beliefs of individuals. It is the insistence that the Buddha's teachings can and should be accommodated to individual and cultural beliefs that have resulted in a confusing and ineffective Dhamma. He instructed the Kalamas to not, these are again a quote, go by others' accounts or by legends or traditions, do not follow scriptures or logical conjecture, meaning conditioned thinking. Logical conjecture would be applying something just because it sounds good to us. Do not form conclusions through inference, analogies, or common agreement, meaning you have to experience it yourself. The Kalama Sutta concludes with the Buddha describing the results of awakening directly through the Eightfold Path. For one who follows the Eightfold Path, following the Noble Ones, if there is an appearance after death, it will be a pleasant abiding. If there is no appearance after death, then in this present life there will be no ill will, no confusion, no hostility. Remaining pure, hatred will not touch you, and suffering ends. So he's describing how to evaluate other teachings. In this life, does it have the possibility of bringing these qualities? Release from hatred, release from ill will, release from a confused mind. And again, he instructed the Kalamas to look for the direct experience of this. There continues to be strong desire to accommodate the Buddha's direct teachings to fit cultural and individual traditions and hardened beliefs. The Buddha taught to avoid the desire to make his teachings fit ego-driven views. He taught the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path as the framework for deciding what is skillful to be mindful of in order to recognize conditioned thinking, to abandon clinging, and develop a life of lasting peace and happiness. The Buddha taught a distinct and direct path to develop lasting peace and happiness. He also taught that recognizing differences in philosophies was not intolerant in any way discriminatory. Anyone seeking the truth of their own existence should and must be encouraged to abandon that which proves to be distracting from that search. Maintaining a refined focus is the essence of mindfulness of the Dhamma and will prevent the confusion and continuing distraction of attempting to incorporate all things into an originally refined and specific Dhamma. we had a discussion earlier before class. So the Buddha is certainly not an awakened human being that would be putting down other people's beliefs or other people's sacred held beliefs or religions. But what he is doing is pointing out the differences. And that's an important thing that he did. It's a courageous thing that he did. He wasn't looking to be the most well-loved spiritual teacher. He never saw himself as a savior, so he wasn't concerned that everyone believe him. The only thing that he was concerned about was presenting a way of living, a way of thinking, a refined way of thinking, that would release every human being that took to the Dhamma, would bring that release from clinging and develop a life of lasting peace and happiness. It's the only thing that he concerned himself with. In order to do that, he had to say, it is this, but it's not that. And that was such an important teaching. And he gives this teaching in different ways all throughout the 45 years of his teaching. There's a lot of suttas where people will come up to him and say, you know, I just heard this from so-and-so. What do you think? And the Buddha would graciously say, well, you know, that's fine, but this is the Dhamma. You know? So there's a discernment that we start developing when we maintain a focus within the Eightfold Path, because it also gives us a way of discerning other teachings that may come along. Does it lead to cessation of clinging? Does it develop wisdom? You know, the Buddha's path is a path of developing heightened wisdom. Does it lead to that individually? You know, does it help me along that path? So it's not so much about following things blindly. It's about having the experience of the release of clinging and developing a life of lasting peace and happiness. And each and every one of us knows when we start looking at something, at least after a little bit of investigation, whether it's likely to develop that. You know, we know it. We have an inner knowing that will help guide us. And if we're not sure, we can just bring it into the Eightfold Path. Is it part of right view? Does it point towards an understanding of the Four Noble Truths? The Buddha taught one thing for 45 years. He taught dependent origination as expressed through the Four Noble Truths. And that gives us a pretty well-refined framework for deciding how does this work and does it work. And again, this is not being discriminatory or intolerant. It's just being focused on the Dhamma. So any questions about the Kalama Sutta, what I just said? You all got it, huh? So I think it's becoming even more of a touchy subject day by day within the Buddhist community, because there's such a push to find one kind of one Buddhism. There's even a new book, and I'm certainly not putting the Dalai Lama down, or Thubten Shodron, I think is how you say her name. But the focus of the book seems to be to define a unified Buddhism, to take every different type of Buddhism and homogenize it into one thing. And I don't think that that's a helpful thing to do. We should certainly be tolerant. And I think that, to me, that's the opposite of tolerance. We should certainly encourage people to deeply engage in whatever philosophy or religion that they believe is the right one for them. And we shouldn't insist that they accommodate other beliefs into that. I think that's one of the reasons why we have such religious strife in the world today, because we're trying to make one kind of world religion, make everybody believe the same thing, rather than encourage the exploration and the deepening understanding of each philosophy as it comes along. If you really believe that Tibetan Buddhism is the Buddhism that you want to develop an understanding through, I think you should be encouraged to dive into it deeply, and don't try to incorporate some aspects of Zen, some aspect of Theravada, bring a little Christianity into it, you know, let's make it all one thing, because you're not going to get anywhere. And if you're really interested in the original teachings of the Buddha, there should be a way of preserving that and saying that, yeah, this is what the Buddha taught. And the Buddha did not teach one big thing that accommodates everything. Because that causes deeper confusion in thinking, not deeper refinement thinking, which is what the Buddha taught. You know, the Buddha was the world's greatest thinker because he knew how to think and how to apply his thinking. And that's the essence of mindfulness. So there's my political statement for the night, too. Excuse me about that.
Doesn't Tibetan Buddhism and the Dalai Lama like follow the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path? And maybe there's other little things that go off, but that's if that's the basis of what the Buddha says, and you know, I don't know what other Buddhisms follow that, too, but that's like Tibetan Buddhism follows that, don't they?
They do and they don't, Gail. You know, I was deeply involved in Tibetan Buddhism for a lot of years, and very, very rarely did I find another Tibetan Buddhist meditate. It's not to say they don't. In much of Tibetan Buddhism, the Four Noble Truths, if they're acknowledged, are looked at as a preliminary teaching and not as the whole path. And so a lot of other things are added as the path to awakening. Okay. And again, I'm not saying that that's wrong or people shouldn't do it. What I am saying is that it then clouds the Buddha's teaching. Mm-hmm. And we should have that, we should be able to discernment. And when there's a strong push to say, well, it really is all one thing, it all originated with the same teacher. So that makes it, well, it didn't though. You know, it didn't all originate with the Buddha. A lot of it was originated because of the culture that the teachings of the Buddha passed through. So it may have had some remnants of the Buddha's teaching, but it now has become something more, and at times significantly different. At times it's not significantly different. You know? But it's a really good question. What do you think of my answer?
I think it's a good answer. I'd probably research it to double check what you said.
I don't know
a lot about it, but you know, my brother teaches it, and I've read a little bit, and you know, I really haven't read a lot, but the one book, and that's what it starts with the Four Noble Truths and goes to the Eightfold Path, and you know, I haven't read all the other things and don't know that much into it, but that's what I, from my little tiny square of knowledge, that's what I kind of got.
Yeah,
I don't know that much.
There's typically the Four Noble Truths, including the Eightfold Path, are looked at as preliminary practices. I'm sure there are many Tibetan Buddhists that keep their focus on that. There's also not a lot of inquiry into what is anatta. And it's usually taken to mean that there's... it's usually applied using reference to emptiness to define, and that's really not what the Buddha taught, you know. But and again, that's okay. But it does become confusing. It became very confusing to me over time. So. Diane, you had your hand up?
No.
Anyone else? So again, I'm not trying to be controversial. I am trying to do what the Buddha did with the Kalamas, though, to keep it focused. Keep it focused on those teachings. Maura, is that hand up or is that a yoga pose?
That was a stretch, too. From my perspective, the teachings are very straightforward. It's very straightforward. It doesn't, you know, there's tons and tons of commentary and there's lots of study on Buddhism, but the Buddha taught very simple four truths, a path. It's not that difficult. It's not that complex. I think everybody in this room gets it. You'll get it. We see it. If you sit and meditate for a short bit, you see it. And I can say, because I can only speak for myself, that I can see the results in my life. And that's all to me, it doesn't need to be more complicated or less complicated than that. And of course, you know, the mind wants to go in. And it's a passion. So for me, and I know for you too, Donna, I know you have perhaps different focus because you want to make sure that what you say is clear and etc. But you know, and I'll read about things out of interest and curiosity, but it doesn't really influence my own personal experience. I see the truth of suffering. I see how it happens, and I see how it can be let go of. See when I'm practicing, and see when I'm not. See when I'm mindful, and see when I'm not.
Yeah.
It's not a big whoop.
Thank you. Yeah,
it's a big book.
Well, it is. It's the most. That's the thing. It's not a big deal to awaken, except it's the most important thing that we can do.
Certainly.
And it does take that refinement of thinking. And refinement means, where am I going to put my thinking? What am I going to develop an understanding of? And again, the saying that it's this and it's not that is not being intolerant or discriminatory. It's just stating the fact. So,
but I wasn't saying that. I mean, just to be clear, I wasn't saying that. I'm saying it's a pretty straightforward teaching. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And I think that the Sangha pretty straightforwardly.
I think so too. The I think I'll leave it at that. So the point of tonight's teaching and the point of, I guess, every class I present is to point out the direct path that is presented and preserved in the Pali Canon. Of course, there's an incredible history of additional teachings that have been used as a foundation, the Buddha's original teachings. And they're all legitimate and authentic religions. They are. I wish I could be a Tibetan Buddhist. I really do. I just, everything about it is just so, even inspiring, I would use that. Except it got to a point after many, many years where I realized I was just becoming more and more confusing. And what I realized was causing the confusion was the additions and the accommodations made to the Buddha's original teaching. And the thing for me, and one of these days I'd love to talk to your brother about this, what I realized was that Tibetan Buddhism has an incredible meaning for Tibetans, but I wasn't, and I don't have that. I don't have the underlying cultural view that would possibly allow me to make sense and make use of these accommodations, and that's what made it so difficult for me. I just don't have that point of view. I don't have that frame of reference, and if I did, I might see it differently. The same as if I was brought up in China at the time of Confucius and the beginning of the teachings of Lao Tzu, and how that influenced Buddhism. It might have made sense for me from that point of view. But none of that's true. You know, I finally engaged Buddhism from the point of view of where I was, from my own anatta. And that's when it made sense.
Can I just say a quick thing? The Dalai Lama always says, I'm just a simple Buddhist monk. He's just a, you know, I mean, they do these elaborate rituals, and like, it's all, to me, honestly, it looks quite crazy, but that's what they do, you know. It's just, it's part of being a quote-unquote, like, Tibetan Buddhist monk. But he always says, practice the Four Noble Truths. Well, he may say other things, but this is what I hear from him. Practice the Four Noble Truths. Be kind and compassionate. And that will make you a better Christian or a better Zenist or a better whatever you practice. And those are all just religions. They're just ways that we, you know, we find community or something like this. Like, he's always a, don't become a Tibetan Buddhist. You're not Tibetan. Like, do your American thing, and then you'll be a good American. You know, you'll be a good solid awakened citizen.
Yeah, you're right. And the. When you really look at what's the point of the Buddha's teachings, it's to let go of every identity you might have. Not have an identity as anything.
And but he had monks, didn't he?
What?
The Buddha had monks, didn't he?
Yeah.
He had a whole bunch of monks. So you need like kind of a solid, you know, practicing community in some type of structure, because it's it's a way of finding refuge.
But he,
if you're wandering.
The point I'm making, he didn't teach something that would
that would cause a self-referential view. I am this or I'm that.
Sure.
It's just a way of letting go of all those views. And that's one of the significant differences, I think. You know, again, it's probably not a useful discussion to go too far into. Yeah, it's just all about human awakening, and we can engage in it in any way. We can inculcate it into
it. 300 million Vinaya rules.
Why?
Yeah.
Because of difficulties in having a large organization with a bunch of unawakened people. They were necessary just to keep order. It was just practical. That's all it was. Part of it, more. I mean, it's a great question. The misunderstanding that has developed over some of the rules, like a monk should never handle money, a monk should never handle food, they weren't because money or food was impure. The Buddha put those rules in place so that the monk had to continue to interact with the laity, so that a connection would be able to be maintained from the Sangha to the people in the town. So a monk was dependent on the town for support, for food, for shelter, for clothes. And so if the monks could take care of those things themselves, if there was no restriction to that, they'd become their own closed society. And the whole point of teaching monks was so that they could go out and keep, so they could interact with the larger community.
Instead they became a closed society.
And because of the accommodations to even the original Vinaya teachings or framework, much like the Eightfold Path has been accommodated. There were very practical ways.
You know, that's I think so much with so many religions, right? With Muslim things, with the Orthodoxy, there were all these practical reasons, and then they became dogmatic.
Yeah. Through the continuing need to establish anatta in every object view and idea. Just practical ways. The only thing the Buddha was concerned about was human awakening. So, any other questions? We'll go around after we meditate. So let's meditate. Find your relaxed meditative posture. Holding your back straight but not stiff. Your ears aligned with your shoulders. Nose aligned with your navel. And holding yourself very loosely, very gently, very lovingly. Allow yourself to settle into this room, settle onto your seats, settle into your bodies, and settle into your minds. Gently close your eyes, gently close your mouth. And take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body. Just get a feel for what that's like. And while remaining mindful of your breath and your body, notice if thoughts are flowing. We're conscious beings. Thoughts should be flowing. The purpose of Shamatha Vipassana meditation is to not be distracted by our own thoughts. So when you notice that you're caught up in your thinking again, simply acknowledge that and return your mindfulness to the sensation of breathing. Putting aside thoughts as they arise, remaining mindful of our breathing. And we'll meditate for 20 minutes.
Thank you for listening. For more Dhamma talks and articles, please visit crossrivermeditation.com. We rely on donations from our listeners to provide these talks. If you have found this talk helpful in developing your understanding of the Dhamma, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. This talk is copyrighted and is made available under Creative Commons 4.0 license. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for use and distribution information. Peace.